regenerate, and certainly find themselves physically in ways that their doctors perhaps told them was impossible. And it's very exciting to witness that. When the Ogata group made My Purpose, this is a big quote, to trumpet the voice and scribe the pen, it's through Star that I'm able to do this, and it's the focus of getting out the message that Dick and I do, as we did on A Slide of Light or in the Woodrow Update. And Star, of course, is the beneficiary of everything that we do. And the more people who subscribe to the update, the more we're able to help, the more we can prepare for, the more we can store for. And we have built a most magnificent facility of which we're infinitely proud and which we invite you to come to, Bill.
I know, and if I'm ever on the East Coast, I'm going to take time to get over
there. It's a beautiful thing, and it stands for something quite wondrous.
They won't let me out of this radio station.
They won't let you out of there, huh, Bill? No. We know where you're going to be next Saturday and Sunday.
Certainly do.
Out of there.
Out of there. And
into the Viscount.
Down there with you.
Uh-huh.
Is there another book along the way?
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, Macmillan put out On a Slide of Light, which thrilled us. But we were doubly delighted to have Doubleday approach us, and we're writing a new book, which will be out at this time next year, hopefully in time for Christmas. And I've got to tell you about the title, because it's the one sure thing. You know, the thought came to me when we were talking about Mount St. Helens. Mount St. Helens blew her top on a beautiful day. These things always seem to happen on a clear day. And you know what happens? You hear thunder. And it occurred to me that perhaps Dick and I were providing thunder on a clear day for people on the changes coming that they might not see, and that's the title of the book, Thunder on a Clear Day.
We get that in L.A. quite often.
Yes, you do. And we're working hard on it, and I'm hoping it's going to be a good book, and hopefully it's for a whole new audience.
Well, I would imagine that it's going to be a good book, and I imagine you have learned some things and have been taught some things, shown some things. To expand even further on
the fun part comes when they show us advanced technology. Now you see it, now you don't. Materialization and dematerialization, like you had that day, as you described when we opened the program, of writing a word and having it gone.
Disappear.
Yes, and this is the excitement of working with the extraterrestrial group. I wish they'd do it more often, but they only come in now and then, and that's to tell us, rather sadly, you're right on target. Nothing's changed.
But the big word that Greta used is technology. And it's a technology that allows materialization and dematerialization. It is a technology that allows teletransportation. And those are things which, as we evolve and advance, will be within the purview of the human species.
Was it the Ogatans that took away the word from me that day?
I don't know, Bill. I never ask a personal question.
I just want to know why they were
sure
messing...
I sure wasn't I.
Wonder why they were messing with my mind.
You knew their word, didn't you?
I certainly did.
Well, then I'd have to assume, and I would hate to break that word into three, that that was the case.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Being messed with by extraterrestrials.
They're fun.
Sophia, you're on.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
And Greta.
Hi.
And Dick. Sure enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Now, what I'm calling about is I read an article about retinitis pigmentosis. It's an eye disease which leads to blindness. Now, it states that a researcher has experimented on rats and has taken out the dead cells and replaced them with live cells, enabling them to see. Now, do you see that this will be possible to have this done to a human being who has this eye disease, and if that would be soon?
Sophia, thank you for that question. It happens to hit home to me on a very personal basis. My maternal grandmother went blind because of retinitis pigmentosa at the age of 47, certainly a very, very young age.
Yes.
And Greta and I have been contributing to the Retinitis Pigmentosa Foundation over the years, hoping that a breakthrough would occur in which they could do something to alleviate the blindness that strikes roughly 100,000 or so people in the country. I was not aware of the breakthrough with rats. Certainly, it's very, very promising. if they have some transplanted cells which could return the vision to rats, hopefully it is replicatable in the human species.
You know, there are about 200 billion cells that work together to make the universe of the body possible, and all have to communicate one with the other for the human to function properly. If a transplant could be possible, and no, we did not know about this breakthrough, wouldn't it be an awesome thing if it could tune in to the rest of these cells? I'm all for that.
Right.
I believe in cellular communication. I have worked with cellular communication successfully. And I would hope, darling, that the case is that there is a cure. We certainly support the work very strongly. So many of our dear ones have been stricken by blindness. My mother was blind. My friend Helen Keller was blind. Dick's grandma was blind. So we're very, very simpatica to the eyes.
Does that help you, Sophia?
Well, I was hoping that she would say definitely soon, because I am one person that has this disease.
I take it that you're personally involved in one way or another with retinitis pigmentosa.
Well, science is working as fast as they can on those things, so be patient, honey.
I guess we'll just have to pray harder.
Uh-huh.
Thank you all.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
And Stanley.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay. I have a two-part question here, which is related. Now, the Ogaden Group, who's giving them their technology? Do they have a higher power somewhere out there that is saying, you people are unsophisticated, here's some information for you? Do they talk to any greater power in the universe? And what do they tell you about religion? Do they believe in Jesus Christ? Do they believe in Jehovah? Do they believe in Buddha? What is their concept of religion?
All right. I'm glad to answer that because it was one of the probably less than three questions I've asked them in the 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had to ask about God early on, and I did. And the answer I got was from a little entity named Tori, and she said, "Ah, God, you must be referring to the supreme energy to whom we all report, to the highest order." And you know, Stanley, I had to take a little while to put that box in my curtain. Not that I was in a framework of anthropomorphic godism, but nonetheless, when I heard the words supreme energy, I'd never heard them before. But I sort of liked it after I got used to it, the supreme energy. They do not refer to any of the deified entities by name, be it Buddha or Muhammad or Allah or Jesus. But then again, we've never asked. They report to a higher order. As far as their technology goes, they're far more advanced than we, and that they were willing to show us through many, many years of our lives, whether it was, as I said before, through materialization or dematerialization, through teletransportation or teleportation, through telepathy, through tongues. They have shown us so many things, and to them, it's ho-hum. But then again, I did ask my second question after God, hey, on a scale of 0 to 10, where are we and where are you? With 10 being high, and they laughed, and they said, well, I guess if you have to put numbers to it in a human way, let's say that you're at about 2. And I said, and you? And they said, we're at about 7. And I accepted that because they were showing us what we thought were miracles.
That's very interesting. They don't have MTV, do they?
Stanley, you know, the system that the Earth is part of, our solar system, is roughly 4.6 billion years old, which makes us a second or third generation star. And as our telescopes become more powerful and we can bring in greater light, they're pushing the boundaries to the life of the universe out as far as 20 billion years, which puts our longevity as a system to less than 25% of the time that the universe is now being counted. Now, man, in the 4.6 billion years, is counted to about 3 million of those years, and that's controversial if he goes back that far. Now, is it so difficult to visualize civilizations in orbiting solar systems of first or second generation stars billions of years older than we are that would have evolved to the levels that we will attain as we attain those years?
A billion years ago, the highest form of life on this planet was an earthworm. So, you know, it isn't so difficult for me to visualize creatures, entities, beings more evolved than we in relation to what was here a billion years ago?
I have a hard time calling them creatures. If, you know, if they can get here on some kind of a craft, it seems like we are the creatures and they're the beings.
And yet they're so gentle, such gentle entities. The question really is, why us? Why would they even be interested in us? And of course the answer came back in an analogy. We could understand why did, when we asked it, why did you help the Biafra? It's so far away. So the distances are a little greater. When someone needs help, you help them.
Well, thank you.
Positive energy of love.
That answered everything.
Okay, Stanley.
Okay. Thank
Stanley,
you.
You're very kind.
Good to have you aboard. And we have Jim here. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Greta.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. These changes that are seeming to come about in the future or starting now, are is their purpose to eliminate those without a developed consciousness, or is the purpose to enhance the consciousness of the people that are here?
Jim, I'd like to tackle that before Greta gets in. Our recorded history is very, very limited. But as our scientists are able to go back in time, they're finding that in our astronomical swings around the center of the galaxy, we go through cycles of geological activity. We go through periodicity of volcanism. We go through climactic changes. Now, we in the middle of the 20th century to the end of the 20th century have enjoyed some of the warmest period in the last 5,000 years. But if you take what is normal climate in the last million years, it would be an ice age. Because an ice age runs for roughly 90,000 years with a warming period for 10 or 12,000 years in between. So what we're experiencing now in the changes of the climate are the natural cycles of nature as the planet advances.
I would like to take the question from a different point of view, if I may. I think it's time to change our own thinking very radically. And while we acknowledge, and we have to acknowledge, you know, that old habits die hard. My kids call me an antediluvian New Age dinosaur. And they're right. It's very hard to let go of your sacred cows. Now, if a scenario such as the Ogata group comes to pass, and they indicate sadly that it will, I feel that we have to dissolve a lot of the artificial barriers that separate us as a people if we are going to survive. And I mean barriers that are racial, political, religious, national, ideological. We're in the advanced stages of our slow progress from the Stone Age to the New Age. And we're in a cosmic countdown. And I think that in order to survive and be what the Ogata group call the survivors or the leaders, architects of the future, we have to let go of old age thinking. We have to anticipate some 21st century cosmic revelations without fear, without stress. And I'm here to tell you, some days it's easier than others. For me.
Well, one other question. The time travel thing seems to exist. I don't have a problem with that at all. But does that mean that if you can go forward and backward in time, does that mean that time itself doesn't really exist and therefore change itself doesn't exist?
No, I don't think so. I think that what you and I are locked into is linear thinking.
Are they?
This
the Ogata?
We live in a linear world. They're not prohibited by those barriers out there.
So the same laws of nature don't govern them as govern us?
I think they do.
Oh, I think so.
I think they do, Jim, because whether you're an astronomer and you look into a telescope and you watch the formation of a galaxy, or you're an atomic physicist and you watch the formation of a subatomic particle, you're dealing with the birth, the life, and the death of an energy formation.
Right.
And everything in between is us.
And also, in our own solar system, every one of our planets has a different concept of time.
Mm-hmm.
On Jupiter, it's not the same as on Earth, and on Mars, it's not the same as on Venus.
We live in a local phenomenon, it might be.
Yes, that's
right.
Exactly so. So we're bounded by a 24-hour clock, but our 24 hours is not the same in any other part of our own solar system, and heaven knows it isn't the same further out into the cosmos. I have no problem with that.
Does that help you, Jim?
It's great. I'm fascinated by it. I have never heard of Greta before, and I'm just completely enamored with everything that she's talking about.
We hope to see you out at the Viscount Hotel then.
I'll be there.
Great. Look
sure
us up.
Will. Thank you very much.
Good to have
Thank
you aboard.
Good evening.
It's Open Mind on this Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins with Steve on the line. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Super.
Great. Hi, Greta.
Hi, Steve.
Greta, I wanted to ask you, you know, we're coming up to, I guess, the one-year anniversary of the Challenger tragedy, and I wanted to know if the Ogata Group has made any transmission or information to you about what the significance was to that event.
I'm sorry, Bill, we couldn't hear that.
Steve wanted to know if the Ogatans had passed any information about the significance of the Challenger disaster to you.
No, they have not. Sad, sad, sad thing. However, you might want to ask that question of Tom Bearden the next time he's on your program.
You'll have an opportunity to ask.
I would suggest Steve call back when Tom is on, and he might give you answers that you don't like, but they are fascinating. Mm. They're mind-boggling, and I think they're credible.
Tom,
I dream of paraphrasing him.
We've had Tom on before about how that actually was an act of war. The downing of the Challenger.
I'll listen in.
I think that's in February. General Graham and Tom Bearden will be on. We call it Soviet Star Wars.
Well, thank you very much, then.
Okay.
Okay.
Good to have you aboard.
Thank you.
That's going to be a dandy show.
Oh, yes. Well, we had Tom here at our last conference last April, and he is just a wonderful human being.
And one of the more brilliant men in the world.
And one of the more brilliant men in the world. His third Alliance, his new book is excellent. Six Caliber Briefing should be on every shelf.
Third Alliance will scare you to bejesus, won't it?
Well, I'm not sure that we understand all of it, but we're trying.
All right, Al, you're on.
Yes. Greta?
Yes, Al.
Yes, I wanted to ask whether you had read any of Ruth Montgomery's books.
Ruth Montgomery's a good friend of mine. I spoke to her not an hour before this program.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I have read all of her books, and she is a darling. We don't always see eye to eye, and that's what makes for very good friendship. I did not understand her walk-ins as well through her books as I did through speaking with her when she was here with me for a few days.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the audiences who read her ought never to forget that this was a very, very pragmatic businesswoman, writer, Hearst paper person who was on the trail with Eisenhower and Truman and Kennedy and Nixon. This was a hardcore businesswoman who also went out on a limb, and I support her posture strongly. By the way, she has just bought a home on the water in Florida, which I gave her the devil for, and she laughed and said, well, I spoke to my guides, and they say the turn is coming, you know, this polar flip or whatever, by the year 2000, but I won't be around to see it, so why shouldn't I enjoy the sun and fun?
Yeah.
She's very cute.
The date is getting closer then.
Yeah. But she's a lovely, lovely lady and deserves respect.
And she's made a large impact on a large number of people and opened up their eyes to the awesome possibilities that will happen between now and the year 2000.
Yes, we agree on one thing, Ruth and I. I never try to convince anybody of anything. I just lay it out and let them make up their minds, and so does she. And she really doesn't care whether people believe or disbelieve. She's out there with a message, and I think it's a good one.
Sure, just give them enough time, and they'll get there.
That's right.
That's wonderful. I was hoping maybe you had a little closer timing on when that cataclysm...
I'm glad you're putting it that way. Let me make a statement that I make very, very strongly, if I may. I don't give or ask for specifics. I don't know anybody that's ever been right about them. From the days of Nostradamus up through Casey to today, when people tell you a specific, don't believe it. Don't buy it.
But somebody
it's
does know,
accurate.
Huh? But somebody does know.
Who?
Don't the spirits that she talks to, Arthur Ford?
I can't vouch for that. I only know that I have dealt with some of the most brilliant psychic minds in the world. And none of them have been right on specifics.
But they all talk about the end of the century.
But they do, yes. That's the generality. They talk about this end of the century. A friend of ours is Billy Graham. He calls it the second coming. Ruth talks about a polar flip. Everybody has a different name for it. We're all calling it a new age. We all see a golden tomorrow. And, hey, if it isn't on September 22nd, 1998 or whatever, so it'll be in 1998 or 1999. But we know, or we think we know, that the general time is now. And it's leading towards the turn of the century.
And she did say there was a safe place in the United States.
Well, a lot of people say that. There is one not too far distant who says the Northwest is very safe. Our posture is there are thousands and thousands of safe places. If I were in the only safe place, or you were, or Knight was, or Montgomery was, or McLean was, or anybody else, we wouldn't be where we are because we wouldn't want to be inundated.
Well,
there
well
are
like
many
Ruth
safe places.
Like Ruth Montgomery, we're not scared yet.
Well, that's not so. She's a very thoughtful creature. Remember now, you're talking about a septuagenarian who's entitled to say, I won't be here.
Uh-huh.
I've been told by my guides, who I believe, that I will be crossed over by them.
Oh, I see.
And she buys that, and that's fine.
Well, I'm just kind of...
Let me tell you a short story.
I'm kind of worried. I will be here.
You will be. Let me tell you a way... Let me just tell you a short story. In September 1981, Greta was addressing a group of Canadian executives in Vancouver, British Columbia. And we were out there for a few days, and I looked at the beautiful landscape and the awesomeness of the scenery there. And I turned to Greta and I said, my God, we know so many people here, so many dear friends that we have both on the Canadian side of the West Coast and on the American side of the West Coast down from Washington, Oregon, and California. I wonder if the West Coast is safe. See, this was early on when these predictions were coming. And one of the Ogata entities came in. And this is what they said, and we put it down, and we published it in our newsletter, and I think it's worth repeating. And this is verbatim. After the first big cataclysm, there will be 20 moons. Now, a moon is approximately a month.
Yes.
To readjust, reevaluate, and remove yourself from any area you think unsafe. Now, what that says to us is there will be a major cataclysm, which if indeed you're caught in and there's a big hole in where you're standing, you'll be gone. But for the most part, it will give you an opportunity to reevaluate your situation and take the action for you and your family that will probably be the course to take.
Let me put it to you this way. We have four grown children, all older than we are, you understand. And one lives in New York City, and one lives in Boston, and one lives in Florida. And only one is in a so-called safe area. And they go about their business as young executives doing their everyday work. They are prepared as best they can be with their small storage programs and so forth. But let me tell you that if a major catastrophe hits, they'll start their countdown of 20 moons.
Uh-huh.
And that's about as specific as I think they have ever done.
How many will survive the cataclysm?
Well, you know, it depends on who you talk to. An Ivan Browning and a Dr. Graham and an Andrea Puharich have numbers that are staggering.
One out of 400?
Well, no, let's put this into a perspective. If we put it into the framework of a life eternal, which I think that listening to Open Mind, you have to.
Why, of course.
Then we all survive, and whether it's incarnate or disincarnate.
All right, now don't beg it, Dick.
Now, I'm going to, because the numbers game is something we'll only know after the fact. They extrapolate a population between 6 and 6.25 billion by the year 2000.
Yes.
This summer we passed the 5 billion mark. One day in July, the 5 billionth human emerged on the planet.
Yes.
Now, the eminent gentleman that Greta referred to talk about a population at the turn of the century being between 1.5 to 2 billion inhabitants.
I was hearing 10 million or so from Ruth Montgomery, I thought.
Oh, no. They're in the billions, whether it's 1 billion or 2 billion. It's not as dire as just a handful of survivors starting from scratch. No.
We have a guy not too far from here who informed us the other day that 4,037 would be left and 37 would be in his community. And we had all we could do to keep a straight face and say, well, if this is what you believe, that's fine. We would hope that better than 2 billion would survive in the flesh on the planet.
Yeah. But that ocean's going 1,000 miles an hour out there, you know. And if that earth underneath it does any twisting at all, that ocean's going to keep right on going.
You talked about beachfront property in Las
Vegas?
Yeah.
Even the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Bible says, get away from the ocean. They even knocked on my door, and I asked them about it. They said, yeah, the Bible says beware of living on the ocean. In the coming problem in the, you know, the Bible.
Well, what is it? About 80% of the people live within 50 kilometers of the sea.
That's right.
So we do factor it in. And again, I think each one has to think and relate to what his posture is going to be. And then you go with it in a positive way.
You know, in the 1930s, Edgar Cayce made a prediction that the Great Lakes would meet the Gulf of Mexico, and what that would do would be to bisect the United States. Well, currently, our geologists are reporting a tilt to the floor of the Great Lakes, and new record highs of these lakes are inundating some very valuable lakeshore property, so that we're getting much, much closer to some of the predictions that were made back away.
Uh-huh.
You have to assign the responsibility of evolution to yourself. How you are going to survive, evolve, maintain, and do.
But Ruth was
talking. Don't worry about the broad picture. Look at the small. I remember when my daughter walked the Appalachian Trail, 2,142 miles, and she walked it solo. And she said to me afterwards, Mother, in the morning when I'd wake up, if I would say to myself, I have 2,120 miles left, I wouldn't have lasted 3 days. What I did was get up and say, I know that today I can make 16 miles. And I think it's the same with survival. You take it in small packets and you do what you can in a very positive way.
Yeah.
Okay, Al?
Yep.
Oh,
very fine.
Very good. Good
very
to
good.
Have you
thank
aboard.
You much.
Thank you, Al.
We're
going
to take our break now here at 11 o'clock for the news, and we'll return for another full hour. North Carolina, Greta Woodrue and Dick Smolo. Greta wrote The Slide of Light. I'll be appearing with her next week out at the Viscount Hotel at the airport. We certainly hope that you come out. And we're talking about the great changes, the information that has been given Greta through her very unusual relationship with a group of entities that come from another place, concerned about the welfare of the people of Earth. And we have Annette on the line. Hello, Annette. No? Are we there? Hello, hello, hello.
I'm here, Bill.
Ah, you are there. But we are wondering about Annette or some of the others. We have lost a computer here for the moment.
Well, then let me just say for those who are going to want to come to the weekend that you and I and Dick are sharing next weekend at the Viscount, let them call Dot.
Yes.
As quickly as they can at the 213 area code in California, 935-0891. And if they want rooms, they'd better call that Viscount Airport Hotel and say they're with Star.
All right, we want them to get out there and...
Otherwise, they won't have room.
And get on with
well,
it.
Well, that's the stayover.
The stayovers.
Stay over and enjoy the entire thing. Robert, you're on.
Good evening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm a very strong believer of astral projection and reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two questions for Greta. And what I noticed is when I read the Bible and it says you got to be saved and all this. And is it possible that... Christian people and all, and the believers of the Bible, they're misinterpreting it. And also, I was wondering if, I believe in fasting too, and if you fast for quite a a while, you know, supposedly around 30 days, 49 days, would it be easier for you to project, you know, to have a out-of-body experience?
Robert, I'm not sure I understand the question. I have no idea what religiosity of any kind has to do with an astral projection of the separation of mind and body, of getting out of your vehicle as you would your car. I'm always reluctant to even bring religion into the dialogue because I don't know that it has a place at all. But perhaps I don't understand the question.
Okay, well, what about the misinterpreting the Bible?
Robert, I'd like to quote Reverend John Price. I don't think that either Greta or myself are qualified to interpret the Bible. But let me tell you what Reverend John Price, who's a Christian minister in Austin, Texas, said relative to reincarnation. He said the concept of reincarnation was part of the Christian teaching until 533 A.D., where at the Second Ecclesiastical Council at Constantinople, it was banished from official Christianity. And then he went on in his speech to say, it's interesting that a doctrine that had been a teaching of Buddha and accepted by Jesus, one that had been taught by the Hindus, the Egyptians, the Greeks, and the Jews, could be dismissed with a stroke of the pen by a council of men.
I see. Okay, well then, thank you.
Thank you,
all
sir.
Right. I think another question Robert asked in there, Greta, was would fasting help the ability to go out of body?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, Bill. I'm not for anything that's not in moderation. So I'm the wrong one to ask. If the answer is yes, I have never tried it. I believe in just about anything except drugs in moderation.
Hello?
Drugs forget.
The mechanics of going out of body are probably best taught by Bob Monroe. And that would be a good question, Bill, for Bob Monroe, who I'm sure is on your program from time to time.
Oh, yes, he is. In fact, he's going to be on again this fall. We will be doing a show in a couple of weeks with the group from Search and Prove, Jerry Gross, and Jim Voigt on the out-of-body. There are a number of ways to do it. I just never have tumbled onto it myself.
Well, you know, meditation itself is just a device to remove the interference of the body from the functioning of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more and nothing less. I mean, there's nothing greatly esoteric about it. People are always asking about meditation, and their whole posture changes when they use the word as if it's a religious or esoteric word. It's not. Most people don't know how to meditate because they don't know how to concentrate.
Okay.
You know, there is probably an overlap between out-of-body experiences and deep dreaming. You mentioned when we talked about that dream state, Bill, mm-hmm. that another way to go forward or backward in time was without a body, and I think that the dream state is a form of out-of-body experience.
We all supposedly do this every night, go out of body. We're talking, though, the experience that you can remember.
Yes.
And that's probably very true, Richard. I know that we have discussed this at some length with Robert Monroe. Always do. Can't get off that subject when you have Bob on.
That's right.
Did he help?
He's the one to ask because he's the expert.
He certainly is.
And there are books that can teach you, because my daughter walks around with one, on how to remember your dreams.
I don't know whether I want to.
Not me either, Bill. I'm all I can do to deal with the daytime.
Some of them that I do remember are just so silly. All right, Jeffrey, you're on.
Yes, before I go on to my main question, do you know if Bob Monroe is related to either Marilyn Monroe or else Boy Scoutmaster in Santa Monica, Keith Monroe?
I have no idea.
Okay, now with my main question, it's kind of a two questions. First of all, what is going to be our daily lives in the Golden Age? How will our daily lives go about, you know, when the Golden Age comes at us, that we have to endure so many changes till the end of the century? We're going to be living somehow in the Golden Age, and what are our daily lives going to be like when we are finally in the Golden Age? Washing, bathing, and keeping ledger and running businesses are going to be so different that we'll left to be we're all left to be great creative and with some kind of guaranteed income, maybe even spiritual. And the second question is, for the people who have perished from these changes, who have died because of these catastrophes, are they going to be enjoying a better life on the other side, or are they just going to be dead and it's going to be just tough beans for the ones who haven't been able to survive and endure all these changes?
Well, from what we know of the other side, it's always nice over there. So.
Yes, he's asking for Bible on one foot, isn't he, Bill?
Mm-hmm.
Let me take the second one first because I love the question. And that's really what's it like on the other side. If I didn't...
Wait a minute. What's it like for the living when the golden age comes?
Well, she was taking the last part of your question.
Thank you.
Oh, that's all right. If you want to go to the first, let me say that we're going to talk about frequencies, higher vibrations, to start with. We're going to get beyond the use of five gross senses. Buckminster Fuller once said 99% of all transactions in this universe are either ultra or infra, demand sensory tuning. And if you want me to translate that into English, it means that you're only aware of 1% of what goes on all around you. 99% are above or below what we see, smell.